It's Wildcat Wednesday here on the home of Arizona men's basketball. We're excited about the Cats as they get ready for the Sweet 16 coming up against Houston. It's going to be a heck of a game, and we're all thinking back to the big games in 1997 and what it was like for the Cats to get to that national title. Joining us right now is a gentleman who probably knows about that as much as anybody else walking the face of the earth, Bennett Davison, joining us here on Wildcats Radio 1290. Bennett, how are you? Bear down.
Bear down always, yes. It's a good little season. I've been over here in the central area time zone. I don't get a lot of West Coast games, so it's exciting to go into a bar and see the Final Four and see the big old Wildcats going out there and doing their thing.
Well, we appreciate you joining us for Wildcat Wednesday. What we do, we started this, Bennett, probably right after COVID, right? Probably in the middle of COVID. It was after the Arizona State game where they beat the Cats 70-7. And we kind of lost a lot of the community that we have here in Tucson. We kind of lost that connection. And we forgot about all the great things. Because, again, you know, as a teacher, you know what it was like getting through all of that. So we came up with Wildcat Wednesday to relive, remind everybody what makes an Arizona Wildcat. So I'm really appreciative of you spending some time with us on Wildcat Wednesday.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, it was. I was a junior college transfer, and I came in, and it really came down to two. I was playing basketball with Bob Burton for West Valley Junior College over in Saratoga, San Jose, California. And he pretty much told me, he's like, hey, you can, as the number one JC player in the nation, you can pretty much choose where you want to go. Where do you want to go? And I said, well, I'd like to stay West Coast, where my parents can come in and family can come and watch me. And when we play Cal and Stafford, they'll be able to watch the games live. So it really came down to Oregon Ducks and the Arizona Wildcats, because pretty much every other team just didn't have the caliber, or they had enough players at the four position that I just wasn't going to get enough playing time. And so Coach Olson comes into the locker, into the, you know, the home visit, and he's sitting there. And Coach O is, he's such a, I've had coaches that are just very emotional spitters and like Bobby Knights, but Coach Olson never said anything without thinking about it first. You know, he was a very, he always had a system. He's very respectful. You never heard the man swear. And he was just sitting there fumbling with his, you know, Pac-10 championship ring. And he came in, he's like, you know, we just lost Corey Williams and Reggie Gary and Stoudemire and Ben Davis and Joseph Blair and Corey and everybody. And he's like, other teams may want you, but we need you. And I think that was really one of the biggest things that for myself and my family is like, let's go where we're needed. You know, where the players are, you know, I'm going to come in. They expect me to start. We have a great team that, you know, freshmen and sophomores that's coming in and some other juniors and stuff like that. But for me, it was, it really came down to that. And then the second thing was, you know how sometimes you make choices in life and because of the most random situations? And that was mine. I came down to Tucson. They picked me up from the airport, and we went up to La Paloma Hotel and came into the room, and there's, you know, practice shorts and T-shirts and pair of shoes and stuff like that. And it was a matter of me going in, and they said, hey, we're going to come and pick you up in about an hour, just kind of clean up and get settled in. And it was the fact that they had a telephone sitting right next to the toilet. I was like, I've never seen this before. I have never seen, I mean, this is some high rollers. This is some fancy stuff right here. And so I called my mom. I was like, Mom, I'm coming to Arizona. I'm sitting on the toilet, and I'm talking to you on the phone. This is amazing. So that was probably one of the bigger, the more defining moments of my life, and now I'm a Wildcat for life.
That is outstanding, because you're a Bay Area kid. You went to high school at Sebastopol. Before you went down to
6,000 hippies.
Yeah, I was just going to ask you about that. Before you went down to play in the South Bay, what did you know about Tucson? What did you know about Arizona as a kid growing up?
Tucson, you think of kind of old westerns, dusty and saguaro cactus. But then I'm from Sebastopol is about an hour north of San Francisco. My dad would drive in and drive the cable cars for 35 years for that commute every day. My mom was also a local teacher in the Roanoke Park School District. And for me, it was, where do I want to go where it's warm? Because I grew up in Santa Barbara, and I was like, you know what? I'm not choosing Oregon. It rains too much. So that was also probably the third deciding factor. And I didn't know much about Tucson. One of the biggest things that also another thing that Coach Olson said is like we're the only show in town. You go to Phoenix, they got the Suns and the Cardinals and the Coyotes and all these different professional teams. LA's got about 15 different professional teams and Hollywood and all that stuff. He's like, we're the only thing that's going on in all of Tucson. So for me, I was such a, you know, it was education, the girlfriend at the time, and basketball. I mean, those are the only three things that I really had to focus on, and that was why, you know, as a University of Arizona Wildcat, those are three main focuses that you have if you have a girlfriend or not. But I was just really focused. I didn't need a lot of distractions. I didn't need to go out and go to frat parties or anything like that. So for me, Tucson was a great fit because it was very similar to a small town compared to a large city, but center of attention. I've always liked to be the center of attention.
I
don't have a problem with that.
Yeah, I remember. Now that you mentioned it, I remember because I worked at KNBR in San Francisco. About the same time. So I remember people talking about your dad and the cable cars during your career. And I want to say Gary Radnich used to talk about your dad all the time.
Gary Radnich, yep. I met my dad used to call into him, and we'd go say hello. And, he was very involved in the Bay Area in sports and high school and college and pros and everything.
Yeah, you know what? I think I've actually, I want to say I did meet your dad once because
really?
I did nights at KNBR. So he would call, okay. He was a big, so folks, KNBR is the Giants station up in San Francisco. So early in my career, I did the Giants postgame show and I did the Warriors postgame show. And every once in a while, your dad would call. He mainly called Gary in the afternoon, but every once in a while he would call. And then I do remember meeting him now that you mentioned that, because he was like one of those celebrity cable car operators.
Yeah, he won a couple, in San Francisco, it's a big thing, but if you're in, like, New York, you've never heard of bell ringing contest.
He did. He won the bell ringing contest.
He won it multiple times. There's a lot of Carl. He'd go out there, and they would go back and forth, and my dad would win it in the, two or three times in the 80s, maybe early 90s. And then he ended up retiring around 97, 98.
Yeah.
He'd already put in his years. But, yeah, it was a little Rice-A-Roni. Rice-A-Roni was their sponsor. And
right.
He would travel down to Australia and do tours and jazz tours and all that stuff. And he'd also, with being a cable car driver, you're always around celebrities. And so I'm like, Dad, who's the most famous person you've hung out with? He's like, oh, I've got Sammy Davis Jr. He was hanging out with Wilt Chamberlain, and he had a Volkswagen Beetle. And he had Wilt Chamberlain in his Volkswagen with his basically knees in the windshield, driving him to the airport after partying all night, getting him to the airport so he can get to the next game.
Which line did he – was he on all of them, or was he the one that went through Union Square?
It was at Carroll, California, Mason. Well,
right.
I'm throwing the names out there, but I don't remember exactly what those Powell Mason.
Yeah.
Mason Powell.
Yeah.
I think he did all of them. I mean, there was times where I would just get a high school friend of mine, and he'd give us $20, and we'd go down to Pier 39. He's like, I'll be here in 2 hours. Come on back, or you're going to have to wait 4 hours because – I just say, hey, Al's my dad, and he's all, come on, son, you can ride anywhere you want.
Oh, that is, because my wife worked at the Sir Francis Drake, the one that had the beef eater out in front.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so she would ride all the time. I didn't even put two and two together until you started talking about that. Like, wait a minute, I know your dad. I've met your dad before. He's called the show. Okay.
He thinks he's more of a celebrity than he really is. He
That is awesome. All right, so Luke comes in. And he says, we need you. And again, all those guys had left and gone on. What was your – when you get down to Tucson and you start playing for Coach Olson, give me the vibe. Talk to me about what it was all about.
Well, it was a big-time show. I mean, I was at a junior – I came from a small town with wooden bleachers, and we'd only get maybe 100, 200 people. So basketball wasn't huge in our areas for the fans. Basketball playing for kids was perfectly big enough. Then I went to junior college, and we won two state championship games, we were in the two state championship games, so we had a good feel for larger crowds. And then you come to Arizona, and it's like, oh, okay, now we're dealing with the big boys here. And, I'm coming in meeting AJ, and he's 6'10", 6'11". Joseph Blair comes in, and I was like, man, I'm glad he left because I don't want to guard him. He's humongous. And then Ben Davis comes through. I was like, man, I would have had to guard him too, and I'm – the first time I touched a weight was like maybe a year before. So it was fairly intimidating. I was just like, can I actually keep up with these guys? You know, in the summer at junior college, we'd play summer leagues, and we would play against Cal and Stanford and University of Pacific. And everyone's like, yeah, you're plenty good, you're plenty good. But, you know, going out there and practicing every day, it was a system. To be able to be at that level, you know, Coach O would have just landed maybe 20 minutes before practice, and he'd come straight from the airport with the sweatpants, and he'd have his itinerary for what we're doing in practice folded in his pants, and he'd kind of crease it every now and then. But it wasn't just so much basketball. It was also with Bobby, and she would have Saturday just a lot of team camaraderie. And I think a lot of the players that never really even played together, we come back every August, and it's almost like we did play with each other, because Coach Olson's like, one of the best things he ever did was when he traveled overseas, he would call every single player that was in that area. Say, come out, take you to dinner. And there was just that kind of, like, you know, when Coach Olson comes into your house, you just don't know what values that coach is going to bring. Is he going to be just like, hey, I'm going to get you in and get you out, never talk to you. Hey, I wish you the best in the NBA or over in Europe. But even 15 years later, 20 years later, he would still call and say, hey, I'm going to be in San Francisco. Would there be any way you can make it down? Things like that. And it was just that
family
thing of when a coach comes in. Yeah, family. When a coach comes into your house and he says, you know, we pride ourselves on family. Yeah, he's just talking. But then your parents are really looking for a coach to be able to say, hey, I have certain values, and I want to be able to pass my child on to someone who holds those same values of family and honesty and, hey, I'll tell you the truth kind of situation. And my dad's like, Coach O, he is yours now. You treat him like he's your son. And if you want to grab him by the scruff, he, you know.
That sounds like your dad.
He's a good country boy.
Okay.
But just original, heartfelt openness,
right,
and warmth.
All right, Bennett Davis is joining us right now on Wildcats Radio 1290. All right, Bennett, so help me out with this. I've always wondered this about Coach Olson. Kelvin Efon, who does the pre and post game shows with me, he'll do his Coach Olson impersonation. You're not ready for him, and when he does that, but you know,
you couldn't hit a shot on a month of Sundays. Let Mike Dibby or Miles Simon shoot the ball.
How did he hold people accountable? How did he get his point across? Because he wasn't a cursor. He wasn't someone who cursed to get his point across. And in today's day and age, and you work with kids, it's so hard to get your point across. And everybody is just so, I don't know what the right word is, but, you know, we treat language like it's the gutter sometimes. He never cursed, yep, but he was able to keep your attention and get his point across. How did he do that?
I think it's just kind of like a legacy kind of a thing, you know, like a John Wooden or Dean Smith. You have this aura about you, but, you know, what did, was it Roosevelt? I may not speak loud, but I carry a big stick.
Right.
Kind of like, and I think he came in, he says, you know, I can recruit anybody, but I'd rather recruit a great kid from a great family instead of an amazing athlete from a not so good family. You know, I mean, my dad was very like, hey, I'm talking, let me get my point across, don't cut me off kind of thing. Listen to what I have to say because I'm not wasting my breath. Coach Olson was like that. He was a guy that never really said anything without, it seems like he just was thinking about saying that. You know, like a lot of things for myself, I tend to speak before I think, and he always thought before he spoke. I guess that would be probably one of the better ways to be able to describe how he coached. And, I mean, when you have, was it, how many years was it that he was there in 97? He'd already been there for 20-some-odd years, right? Had some 20-year streak of making it to the NCAA tournament. And if we didn't do it, guess what? Gene's coming in, and he's going to do it. Or Donnell was coming in to do it, or whoever. So, I mean, it was just one of the things that's saying, hey, you go out there and you give everything, and then we'll get you off and we'll put you right back in because we need that energy and that effort.
Which was
worse? I think it's just mutual respect. I mean, he says, I'm not going to swear at you or put you down, but you're going to respect me, and I'm going to show you the same kind of level of respect.
I wish we had more of that in the world right now.
Yeah.
Which was worse? So. Which was worse? Making him mad or disappointing him?
It's definitely one of those things where it's like, if I'm not yelling at you, I don't care. And if and you want him to. There's a thing where he has these big old hands. I think when we got our ring size, I was like a size 10. He had a size 14.
Wow.
He had these big country boy hands, and then he would put them around, and he'd put them on your forearm, and he'd kind of massage your hands. And everyone will sit there, and all players will know what you're talking about. Grab your forearm or grab your tricep, and he'll just like, all right, I've told you this twice. You're not doing it, but I need you to do it. And that was like, that was about as aggressive as he would get. He'd just sit there, and he'd just kind of, like a cat needing the pillow kind of a thing. He'd just squeeze your arm. He's like, I need you to listen to me. And it was just one of those things that's like, you know, you don't want to let him down kind of things, because it is a system. It is a business, but at the same time, it was a way of life.
How did coming to the University of Arizona change your life, make you a better person?
Well, you don't know what you're the perfect decision. You know, everybody has a picture perfect idea of how they want their lives to go. And it was unexpected for me for my own thoughts to go to Arizona. I mean, no joke, I was knocking on University of San Francisco's door, St. Mary's, Santa Clara, Cal, Stanford. I went to all their summer camps as a junior in high school and junior and senior in high school. They're like, oh, you're the MVP. Okay, great. But I didn't have one scholarship because I was from a little small town of 6,000 hippies. And so I didn't know what to do. And so we started asking, like, well, what do we do? So we, mom and dad, we got in the van and just started driving up to the campus of St. Mary's. And where's the gym? Hey, where's the head coach's office? They're like, what do you want? And so we knock on the door. Hey, coach, how's it going? Hey, here's my son. Here's the tape. Do you think you can recruit him? Do you have a scholarship? They're like, who are you? And that's not how this whole process works. We're like, well, we don't know what to do. He's like, well, go to a junior college. Well, what's a junior college do for me? What does it do for my grades? I mean, playing time is like, oh, it's 2 years, and you can redshirt or gray shirt, things of that nature. And then after my first year, I actually came in after probably a month of practices, and I was getting my butt handed to me. I'm telling you, I was getting pushed around. I was getting banged up. I didn't think I could compete. And my coach comes to me and says, so you don't think you can compete? Let's go into the office. I'm going to call your dad. And Coach Burton says, hey, Al, you know, your son's here, and he doesn't think that he can compete on this high level, and he's kind of not feeling he's strong enough, and blah, blah, blah. And my dad says verbatim, he's like, I didn't send him down there to quit, get his ass back into practice. And he's like, thanks, coach. Thanks, Al. That's all I wanted to hear. And so it was one of those things of being surrounded by men. There's like, you may feel like you're losing, you're not getting it, but I'm telling you, you don't have it out. So you have to figure out what it is that you need to be able to do to stay. And so at the end of my freshman year, I became the number one JC player in the nation, and I didn't know it. And wow. My coach would come in, he would actually start handing out recruiting letters at the beginning of my sophomore year, and he just kept them from me. He never gave them to me. And so I'm just sitting there thinking like, man, all these guys are getting letters. I'm not getting any. And then all of a sudden he comes in with one day, hands out a few recruitment letters, and he drops a box down on my desk. And I was like, what's this? He's like, every school in the nation wants you. I was like, what do you mean? I looked in there. There's Georgetown, USF, Stanford, Cal, St. John's, everybody, Kansas.
Did you get one from St. Mary's after they told you this isn't how it works?
Exactly. Exactly. Well, USF comes, you're like, I know this didn't go well, but would you come and think about playing for us? I was like, I was just knocking on your door last year, and you guys told me no. Like, yeah, I know.
Wow.
And just little things like that were, and to go back to the original question was, I didn't expect it. I didn't think I was all that good. I mean, I felt like I was one of the better players out there, but I didn't feel like I was the best player. Does that make sense?
That is amazing.
And so for Arizona to come out there, and my coach was like, yeah, you have some top-level schools. And I was like, are you kidding me? And that was kind of the shocker where, you know, how do you prepare for it? Well, I was my mom and dad's surrounded me with men that knew basketball, new values, and new hard work, and paid off.
So help me out here. Bennett Davis is joining us right now. Is Arizona's in this run to the Sweet 16 and hopefully on beyond? TCU was a tough game. Wright State wasn't an easy game. There's been a lot of tough games along the road. Now, we remember Miles Simon messing up Coach Olsen's hair.
Wasn't Miles Simon. You get that right. That was me.
That was you?
That was me. I know it's halfies. We all look the same, but that was me.
All right. So you're messing up his hair, right?
Yes.
We remember all of that, but a lot, you know, as we get older, we forget how tough it was to get there because you had some fist fights to get to that national championship. Talk to the fans here. Remind them of what it was like to get to that national championship, and it wasn't just a walk in the park.
I felt like the toughest games were the first games because everybody had some crazy strategy. Slow the ball down. The game's going to be 55-58, kind of things like that. When we played Southwest East North Louisiana, some school and with Musselman, and they slowed the ball down, and we were down 6 points with 2 minutes left, and everyone's like, uh-oh, here goes another first-round loss. And then we played College of Charleston and just couldn't get anything going. And just, you know, the tournament's different. Like, Kentucky just lost to, was it Dayton State or something like that?
Mm-hmm.
The March Madness is chaos. And if you want to take all that chaos, the best way to define it or sum it up is who can put the six luckiest games together? I mean, after all the game, I think outside of Kentucky in the overtime, I think if you took our win difference, it was a matter of like 7 or 9 points. It wasn't much. That's just a couple missed shots that didn't go in, a couple turnovers here and there, and we don't have a championship. I mean, it's just one of those things that who's playing, who's vibing at the right time, how does the ball bounce, who makes their free throws, who allows the least amount of offensive rebounds. It is chaos. Because, I mean, you go in there and you're only 18, 19 years old. Some kids are 16 and 17. And then you go into the stadium in Indianapolis, and it's a football stadium, and it actually has breeze. If you ever played volleyball, you can kind of see the ball moving and floating. The gym is so big that the ball, it has an outside feeling to it because the stadium is so large. It holds something like 80,000, and there was 50,000 during the game.
Wow.
So for someone playing in an old wooden gym that barely 200 people just ago came in, was playing in, to come to a place where you're in front of 50,000 people and millions are watching you, it's a quick transition.
Wow.
You know, you got to just kind of go out there and just play. I mean, that's what all the practices are for that moment, to be able to come out here and just, like, let's just go play.
Bennett, I don't want to take too much of your time, but I'm just going to beg. We have to do this again. I mean, I've got so many more stories I want to hear, so many more questions I want to ask.
Yeah, ask another one.
But I do have one that we ask everybody. What does it mean to bear down? What does bear down mean to you?
I think it's just it's a culture. I think it's like a vibe. I think it's something where Tucson does have something very special when you're there. When you think of Tucson, you think of a second-rate or a third-rate city behind, you know, New York and L.A. and Chicago, the first-rate cities, and then you have Charlotte and Raleigh and all the second-rate, and Tucson's a little bit on the smaller side of things. Not a lot goes on there. But when you're in Tucson and you go around and you see all the wild, everything's Wildcat, red and blue and white, you have people coming up to you. It's like, oh, man, you're A.J. Bramlett. It's like, no, close, but I'm Bennett Davidson, and everybody goes up to A.J. thinking he's Bennett, and all that type of stuff. And it's just, you go back to the Circle K, and you come back to the campus from when we were there, and they have underground computer centers and Speedway and Sixth Avenue, and it's just kind of like going back home after you've been off to the military service for a few years. You come back, it's like you just bear down. I mean, it's your home. I mean, that's what it is. It is a saying, but it's also a feeling and a sensation that comes over you when you're in Tucson or at a game. You know, it's camaraderie. It's the same thing as when the players never played with each other for the Wildcats, but they're best friends, like they were out there sweating on the court together.
Bennett, this has been awesome. Can we do this again real soon? I mean, I want to talk about your career in Europe. I want to talk more about Coach Olson. I got all kinds of questions that I want to ask you, but I'm up against the clock. So if you don't mind, I'd love for us to sit down and do this again.
Let's do it over Europe. I've got some crazy and silly stories about Europe over there. You know, obviously you're in a different culture and lots of different things going on, so there's a lot of chaotic, funny stories. You'd be like, there's no way that happened. I was like, yep, I was there. It happened. So I'd be absolutely down for that. I actually reached out to Erica for some tickets, but San Antonio, I'm in Dallas, Texas right now, but San Antonio is about 4 hours away. So with me teaching, driving 4 hours, and then the game for 2.5-3 hours, and then driving back 4 hours, I wouldn't have enough. Probably get back about 4 a.m.
Oh.
I got to teach the next morning. So for me, I got to call it. I'm not going to be able to make it, but if we
we're going to do this.
I'm not even going to say it. Enough said.
Yeah, we're going to do this. Hey, Bennett, I really appreciate you.
Absolutely.
Helping us out with Wildcat Wednesday. The stories about your dad. I remember the bell ringing in Union Square and all that. This has been fantastic. So thank you so much for doing this. We'll get you back on again real soon. Ladies and gentlemen, Bennett Davis is joining. He just made my day.
Let's go Wildcats. Let's get it.
Bear down.
Let's get it.
We'll continue with This is Wildcats Radio 1290.
The countdown is on for the 2024 NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, live from Detroit, and you can attend in person for free.
Welcome to the NFL Draft.
See the next NFL stars and experience the ultimate NFL fan festival, featuring live concerts, interactive games, player autographs, and more. The NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, April 25th through 27th. Visit NFL.com/draftaccess to register for free entry today.